You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 198. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. Wow, Steve, two episodes from 200 in the kind of sleepy off season here, late November, kind of a Thanksgiving show. And we're talking about some year-over-year Statcast changes, which I guess you could squint and say we're thankful for improvements and not so much with the downside. Bit of a reach, just improvising here and the getting the cobwebs out, really, Steve. But yeah, we got a great show tonight. We are going to be referencing an awesome series of articles by Mike Podhorzer on FanGraphs, who has done some really entertaining articles, just kind of in the spirit of accountability in his own right, of looking at stuff early in the season and coming back to it at the end of the season. And that was kind of a jump off point for us to look at year over year changes, some risers and fallers. And so we'll kind of bounce around a little bit there. But Steve, how's it going, man? Happy off season. We can kind of catch our breath, keep it a little loose, and get ready for the exciting formulation of ideas that we'll take into spring with us. But how you doing?
Good. Yeah, crazy. Coming up on 200. I think that'll be right around like our Christmas episode, which is interesting. And your little intro there, that reminded me. I think last year our episode did drop on Thanksgiving, so we did like the why we're thankful for fantasy baseball. That got some good reviews.
Yeah, people were in.
I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe we'll have to see if we could squeeze in one next week or something.
We save it for 200 and do the Christmas one.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Do the gift that keeps on giving, fantasy baseball.
All right. We're workshopping there. Somehow the sausage is made. I like it. Yeah. This is a fun topic. Something we normally do in season, right? Like, and it's usually spurred by those Mike Podhorzer articles that come out early in season when Statcast data and some key metrics start to stabilize and things like that. But not to bury the lead. Mike does an amazing series over at FanGraphs, and I grew up reading FanGraphs and grew up reading Mike, and it's definitely shaped me and this show and sort of this accountability and coming back to articles that you wrote. Mike always does such a good job with that of reviewing, hey, here are these changes that I identified early in the season. Like, did it actually mean anything? Did the fact that player X gained 2 miles an hour on his max EV in April, did he have more power? Was that actual true or is it, was it just noise? So Mike does a great job in that. That's honestly probably what, you know, subconsciously influenced some of my input on having on this show and making sure that we always come back to things that we talk about in our takes and our calls and always reviewing ourselves and trying to get better that way. So shout out to Mike Podhorzer there. Check out all those articles. He also does the Mining the News series on Rotographs, which is I've mentioned that a million times on this show before. It's just such an invaluable resource of Mike just basically digging through every team's beat reporter and every single possible news outlet.
Oh, yeah.
And posting any relevant piece of news fantasy-wise. So he does amazing work. Shout out to Mike. We'll link all of those articles that we reference here for the show, and it's a great jumping-off point. This is something that we normally do in season and we don't really come back to, and we sort of try to use it to find a leg up on certain guys and okay, these guys could be potential interesting ads, and what we hope for is, like, you know, the league winning April ads, right? That's mm-hmm. the goal of what we do in there. So to look at it through a year end lens, and maybe apply it for next season, I think is a cool twist on something that we've done in a different way before.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that we'll look more at the players throughout this show, but a fun thing Mike does with the articles is kind of charts the ones that are more like end of April, early May, so like in that ballpark, to basically say where the early signs sticky throughout the whole season and how did that impact kind of the back of the baseball card stuff, which I found, Steve, that on the pitching side, was kind of most interesting from like looking through all of those, that some of the stuff that we point to, and we'll get into the year over year risers for things like Stuff Plus or fastball velocity, things like that, that kind of, it's almost second nature to us after doing this for, you know, 5 years on the pod, but even longer just as managers, that in the spring or in May, April, you're checking to see whose velo is up, and you kind of just assume those are the right lottery tickets to buy. But to go back and look at, you know, what was the impact of them, and it kind of is a spoiler alert, but something that was interesting is it seemed like whether it was Stuff Plus or velocity gainers, it's almost like it's easier to find the good stories, to predict the good. Some of the ones where the arrow is pointing down on like, okay, they've lost velocity or their Stuff Plus isn't as high, those things held throughout the season, but it didn't always impact the back of the baseball card or like a strikeout percentage. So I don't know what to make of that necessarily. Like, are those just kind of wily veteran pitchers that are finding a way to get it done and without having all the velocity, but people who do add velocity, you can kind of sign up for like, oh man, they're going to take a step forward most of the time, unless it's a head scratcher like Jack Leiter or something like that. So anyway, check those out. But what we are starting with is, I guess, looking at hitters, Steve, because hitters, you know, the table on FanGraphs has the year-to-year changes, and we got max exit velocity.
I wanted to hit on that, too. I know we've mentioned that before, but it's an extremely underutilized tool. So, yeah, I'm glad you're plugging that.
Yeah, and we can link that out as well. But, you know, all of the wonderful things about FanGraphs with, you know, how many sorting options they have on their spreadsheets, they have the year-to-year changes, which, again, is great to just see, you know, what do you want to look at? Strikeout percentage, ex-WOBA, like WRC+, batted ball stuff. So we kind of just picked out a few here, but I think the max exit velocity is one that Mike profiled as well. So looking at that list, I guess, Steve, talk to me about the stat itself, because it's an indicator of raw power and sometimes a little bit more telling than some of the average numbers, which is interesting because it's such a small sample size, but the names are interesting as well. So we can sort by that and just kind of freestyle on some of the guys that jump out to us when we look at year over year max EV gainers.
Yeah, I think max exit velocity sometimes gets glossed over because max exit velocity, when you look at the stat, it's a sample size of one, right? Like if a guy hits a ball 150 miles an hour, that's it. Whereas if you want to tell a guy's true game power, right, it's better to look at like 90th percentile exit velocity or 95th percentile exit velocity, like where you expand the sample and say, okay, when the guy hits the ball hard, you know, what is the outcome and how hard does he hit it often, right? Whereas max exit velocity is one sample and can be an outlier or misread or something like that, right? In some cases, I'm not saying that they're littered with errors, but, you know, there's times where, you know, things are corrected and whatnot. But I digress. But I still think it's interesting because I think it's a good indication of raw power. This is something that Eno Saris over The Athletic talks about all the time. And as someone that listens and reads basically everything he puts out, it's how I view it as well. It is a snapshot of a guy's power ceiling, right? And if they're, especially in the lens that we're looking at it, where there's a change between years, that tells me that a guy has a new power ceiling. That doesn't mean that there's a new level, that a guy who is a 5-homer hitter is now a 20-homer hitter because he hit a ball 5 mile an hour more than he did in the past. But there's something that changed that could indicate that there could be more power that's coming. So when you look at it through this lens, I think it's very interesting. And a few of the guys here that did have improvements, especially early on, like Mike highlighted, you should pay attention, essentially. I think this is a really good list, and there are some really interesting names that I wanted to hit on and discuss now that we sort of introed the stat there.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, the if we want to go by the names that you've called out, Steve, you've got Corbin Carroll on here, Trevor Story, Brandon Lau, yeah. And Jason Dominguez. Yeah. So talk to me about these names, because there are some other ones that are at the very top of the board that we've been talking about all year, like a Pete Crow Armstrong, but like you pulled these ones. Give me your initial thought. I mean, Carroll has been an interesting power case study throughout his young career in general. So maybe let's start with Corbin Carroll on his big bounce back.
Yeah. So he increased his max exit velocity by 5 miles an hour year over year. And for him and for Story and for Lau, that tells me that they're healthy. Right. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, like all three of them were healthy and had amazing to really good years. Right. You know, maybe Trevor Story was just good rather than really good, but Carroll was, you know, cemented himself as a top 10, maybe top 8 fantasy asset, right? Trevor Story 30, had a 25-31 season. Yeah, he was great, especially at his cost. And Brandon Lau had a vintage Brandon Lau season, right? So that's another thing that I should have hit on. Like, it's an indication of health, which is why it's important, right? Like, if a guy you know, like Carroll, like I'll pull up his year over year velocity here, but
yeah, check,
I'm sure there's
out
a trend.
In the meantime, what's interesting, like you said, is max EV, you know, that's on a sample size of one, but if you go to year changes on barrel percentage across the entire league, Corbin Carroll's the number one biggest riser.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, I think it just shows that, you know, it's raw power. It's a sign of health. It's a sign of a possible step forward. And there are cautionary tales every now and then, like a Tommy Edman who started with like a blistering April. But for the most part, you know, I think, you
dude,
know, I don't
I
have
remember
mics in
being
front of me, but
I remember
like
that ball that Tommy Edman hit. And being like, whoa, like, what is going on?
It's a new player, right? But
yeah,
more times than not, it will lead to, you know, a sample size of the entire season, not just, you know, punishing one baseball. It doesn't work like that. So,
yeah. So Carroll's year-over-year max EV, you know, his first season that, like, cup of coffee had for the month of September, he was called up, was 107. Then 2023, when he was amazing, 114 miles an hour is max exit velocity. Then last year, when he was battling the shoulder injuries and all that, it was down to 112, 111.5. And then this year, the 115.8. So an increase of 4 year
easily
over year.
Easily a career high.
So, that was an indication that there's another level to Corbin Carroll's power that's coming. And it did. He had 31 homers this year.
Well, and the other thing is he played, you know, 15 games less than he played last year and hit 9 more homers.
Yeah.
So when we talk about like another level, I think it starts to beg the question, Steve, like you're kind of playing the game of like, oh, if you pair his 2023 average with his, you know, and speed with his power this year. But like, I mean, are you're definitely in on Carroll. I know you've mentioned it, but like. Yeah, it's an interesting one on, is it top 8? Is it top 6? Is he a 35-40 candidate that could put together a 270-plus average? So I actually want to just zip over to, because some of the earliest projections are out. Let's see if they're buying it. Yeah, so they've got, I mean, Steamer's got 137, so they don't have his game volume up that high in 27 homers. But then Fangraphs has 154 games, 29 homers. So I think, you know, I'm taking the over on that if you can give me 154. But, yeah, Carroll's a great name in there.
I didn't want to do this, but I'm pulling up the early ADP. But give me a second here.
Oh, yeah.
Just want to make sure that we're looking at just November. There we go. We can get a proper ADP. He's 7 overall.
Okay, so who's
6
in front of him?
So it's 6? Judge. Okay. It's Otani, Judge, Witt, Soto, Ramirez, Scooble, and Carroll. So I was going to say sixth among hitters. Skubal's just going right before him. Yeah, he is the sixth hitter off the board, seventh overall. That's
and then who comes right where I would take him, I think. Yeah, who comes right after him?
Ellie, J-Rod, Acuna.
Okay, yeah, I think that's about right. The Ellie Carroll is interesting. I think J-Ram is just so tough to nudge out of there, dude.
I think I would still take J-Ram, but Carroll's close for me. Yeah.
Some of the other names, notable names on year-to-year max EV risers, Josh Naylor, number one, which is pretty interesting, Steve, because he had kind of didn't he trade back power? Yeah, so he went from... This year was kind of his story of adding a ton of average back and the ridiculous 30 steals, but his homer total went from 31 down to 20. So that's
I wonder how much the ballpark had to do with that, right? Like, I'm just looking at, I'm pulling up
because
like
his fly ball rate stayed
homers,
the same.
Homers by
his
park. Yeah, so. 23 homers if all of his games were played in Seattle. If all of his games were played in Cleveland. Oh, wow, that's interesting. Also 23. But, like, Tampa, New York, 29, 27, 27 in Cincy. So, you know.
He just signed the big new contract. I mean, honestly, I think that so if you got ADP pulled up, where's Naylor going?
Naylor is going the 71st. Right behind Austin Riley, right before Hunter Goodman and Ben Rice.
Okay, well, I mean the crazy thing is his max exit velocity. Not only was the biggest increase, it was 99th percentile. So it's not like he went from like okay to good or anything.
Yeah, he went from okay to elite. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an interesting one there. Pete Crow Armstrong was second. Corbin Carroll was fifth that we talked about. Just kind of scanning. I mean, Jaron Duran was 11th on the list. We'll talk about some of these other names, so I'll kind of hold off. Vlad is in the top 20 there, so that's encouraging signs. I know one that Mike mentioned in his article. If I'm not sure if it was this or another one, but Vinny P, and he is one that... just jumps out to me as like, I don't know if it's like the new Castellanos in terms of like how many years in a row are we just looking at Castellanos as like stat cast metrics and we're like, he's got to turn a corner. I guess Vinny P had 32.
Yeah. I'd say he did turn a corner this year. Like,
what's weird is it happened with like, his barrel rate is like sub 11%. But yeah, you're right. I mean, hitting 32 homers, it's like, who cares? He's just pulling the ball like crazy.
It was kind of the opposite, right? Like, he almost overperformed his batted ball quality after years of saying, hey, this is going to come, right?
But I guess it's a really good proof point.
I also think this is probably, this has got to be the first time that he played this many games, right? Like, you know, the first time he had over 600 plate appearances. So
He played 160.
That evened out. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. So Vinny P is, when you look at the whole thing, I mean, a sub 800 OPS, but 32 homers. It's just odd for a guy that, you kind of,
does he not walk that much? Is that a,
he usually does. Yeah, they went down a little bit. So, anyway, past
Vinny P
is,
or Josh Naylor. They're, basically back to back on
I'm
first.
Taking Naylor, man. What about you? I like Naylor.
ADP agrees with you. Okay. I think I would go Pascantino, honestly. I like some of the batted ball metrics a little bit better.
Okay. What about my 30 steals I'm getting from Josh Naylor?
I don't know.
He only got caught twice, dude.
Yeah, and like, you know, he did have 10 and 6, like, but it seems like such an outlier to me. I guess I'm just selling the Mariners. Like, I'm just so down on the Mariners on everything. Maybe I'm just wrong there. But dude, is he going to see, like, you know, I would bet on it being a low double digits rather than closer to 30. But it's a good point.
Okay, well, let's shift over to our second category, which is bat speed, and still kind of new to the, you know, to the arsenal of things that we look at. But bat speed was, because of that, it was one that I was kind of reading the article closely from Mike, and this was mm-hmm. one that it seemed like was pretty indicative that higher bat speed. And the reason I say that, Steve, is if you remember when we, along with the rest of the world, were breaking down the kind of the StatCast data around mm-hmm. bat speed, is that it's not always about speed. And that's where, you know, like if you look at acceleration that Kyle does on pitcher list, which is, it's like speed and swing length. And it's like, okay, if you have a good bat speed and a short swing path, that's the best combination type of thing. But most of the guys who were risers on the bat speed ended up basically being a positive fantasy story for the year. So when you look at some of these bat speed guys, let's talk about some of the names that jumped out at you, because they're not exactly your like O'Neill Cruz, Giancarlo Stanton names.
Yeah, and they really wouldn't be, because those guys have elite bat speed and they kind of stayed up there. This is interesting because it's another indication of, hey, maybe there's something added here or changed that is going to result in more game power. And I think for the most part, that's kind of what happened here. Like Bryce Terang being, the second on this list, right? As far as his overall difference in bat speed between 2024 and 2025, it was 66.2 miles an hour in 2024, up to 70.7 for 2025. And when Mike looked at this in mid-May, like there was a 3 mile an hour increase. So like, you know, hey, there's something going on here with Bryce Terang. And what do you know? Like he broke out and was basically a five category stud with, you know, what did he finish with over, he finished with over 20 homers, right? Or close to it at least. So yeah, 18. So yeah, like kind of like a Jonathan VR, like light, right? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's coming, a low 20 homer season and a 50 steal season. If you compare the two, from 2024 and 2025, though, it is hard to steal when you're jogging around the bases and all that. So, that was the name that jumped out to me the most. Like, right, like you, like Bryce Terang was probably not I guess he was rostered a lot because of the steals, right? But
yeah,
daily leagues, right? Like 12 shallower, yeah, 12 like team leagues, he was probably stretches. Available for, you know, like especially if he wasn't hitting that many homers in April, which I don't think he did.
Yeah, he was definitely profiled as more of a rabbit than like a 2020 threat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Terang's a great one. I mean, we talked about him in recent shows as kind of like on that fantasy mm-hmm. value, like all value team, for where you got him and what mm-hmm. you got out of him. So, yeah, I think Terang is a great one. There's some that, you know, are a little bit like, you know, Brendan Rodgers is on the list.
Yeah.
But Ben Rice is there, and that's one that we've talked about, and obviously with him, what, he was like the second catcher that went off in our early mock.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, Ben Rice is a great story. Vinny P is also in this, so there you go.
Pascal, what do you Tino, make of Anthony Volpe? I don't know if I'm allowed to comment being in the tri-state area and just how maligned Anthony Volpe is.
Well, it's tough to, like... Yeah, I was just listening.
He comes
to, like,
up on
talk,
another
talk
list
radio.
Here too. So yeah,
yeah, it's so interesting. I was just listening to like Covino and Rich on like Fox Sports Radio. Those guys are great. But they were talking about how like the Jeter tag is just like kind of haunted Volpe. And you look at him, and he's like, he's still 24 years old, and he just went 19 homers, 18 steals. The .212 average is obviously pitiful. Yeah, you can't be a table setter of any sort and have like a sub 300 OBP for three straight years. So like, he's not my type Steve. Like, you know, I'm into the guys that are like low strikeout and high walk rate, and Volpe doesn't give you that. He's just kind of like the flash metrics. But he's 24 years old, and the power is, it was a nice rebound on the power year. It's another one that you say, okay, well, if he, 2 years ago, he stole 28, and last year he hit 19 homers. Like, could he be a 20-30 guy? But it's hard for me to ever get excited about those. Like, what's the batting average? 225, or are you going to get a 240 year? Like, I'll sign up for that as a lottery ticket if it's like at the Tyler Fitzgerald cost from this past year. But what's Volpe's ADP if you still got it up? Is it like one? It's got to be after like 170, right?
He's going 325th off the player. 325th.
Well, there you go,
the
man. Yeah. That's way past
372 ADP. Yeah.
So if it's that late, then.
Dude,
I mean, there's a price for every investment, and like that's well within like an MI. Why not? He could put it together and have like a 20-30, 240 season.
And he did have shoulder surgery this offseason. So, and he was hurt pretty early in the season. I think it was May or early June when he injured his shoulder. His defensive metrics fell off a cliff. So, like, to do that and still put together a 19-18 season, I know all the other numbers are basically garbage. The counting stats are okay. It was, you know, 65 runs, 72 RBIs.
Expected to be cleared for hitting mid-February.
Yeah. Okay. So, hey, I mean, look at Zach Neto, right? I'm not saying that Volpe is going to be Zach Neto, right? But he missed the first 2 weeks of the season, right, Neto? And he was, you know, one of the best shortstops, and the shoulder, it was a shoulder injury too that did not affect his power. I know every player is affected differently, but as far as power and speed combo, like, he's got 52 homers and 70 steals through his first three seasons. You know, so close to 20-ish average, right? So that part of the game is there. It was even there this year in what was basically a dreadful season where he hit 212. At the same time, he's never had an OPS above 666 and a WRC plus above 83. So, like, I know a lot of that factors in the fact that he doesn't walk much. And does strike out a bit, which, you know, hurts the real life game more than it does for fantasy. I don't know. I've long been an anti-Volpe apologist. I've sort of faded on that over the recent years. But if you squint, there's still stuff to like. And the fact that he,
for a 24-year-old,
you know, had a career best barrel rate, career best bat speed. You know, maybe there's another level here. I don't know. That's way, way, way too low of a price, especially if like the Yankees don't make a move and he's still their starting shortstop, which indications as of November 19th, that is the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you know, what name comes to mind that Volpe would need to like follow this path a little bit is like a Jurickson Profar. Where,
yes,
like,
for seven years,
you were looking at it and you're like, are you really like a 230 hitter after all that? And then, you know, the average never has buoyed way up to where you can like count on it, but 240 flipped from like the upside to the expectation.
The
and then
floor.
He pops off for a 280 year. And it's like that could be a path. And
like,
you know,
he definitely has more raw power than Profar. Although Profar did have 220 homer seasons in 2018-19, but that was
he's got a leg up
and
on
more
the speed.
Yeah,
for sure. So, anyway, yeah, it's an interesting name just cause we gotta talk about them all. Anybody else in the bat speed group you wanted to hit on, or are we good to move on?
No, I think we're good to move on.
Okay, well, we're going to take our first ad break, and we got one more. It's going to be barrel percent, but we're going to take an ad break. We'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, moving along here, and we'll just do the quick toggle on the year-to-year leaderboard. And yeah, I'm just scanning here. God, man, anytime I see Brendan Rodgers on these lists, and I've seen him on multiple.
Dude, how many times have we been tricked by him because of this? Yeah. We like does he like pay to get his name on these lists? Like we've done this exact show so many times, and Brendan Rodgers' name has come up.
He, all we have to do is
and dude, like say we were suckers because like go it, off. And like we were saying like, oh, it's Colorado, you know, like you got to give him a chance, like he has that extra thing, extra shot because it's Colorado, you know, you're looking uh-huh. you're we'll look past things. And it was like,
and then Houston,
oh, Houston, like yeah, like they're giving him a shot, they're a good organization, that's a good ballpark, good lineup.
Oh, he's number yeah. two.
Well, who's he gonna sign list. With who's he gonna sign with this year that'll make us buy in again? I don't know who could that be that would be that interested. I don't know, I digress.
Yankees resurgence. I don't know. But then you look, Volpe is fifth on this one on barrel percent.
That's
so,
why,
again,
yeah.
Interesting. And I mean, these are related stats. So you've got some similar names with PCA, Bryce Terang, Schwarber, who already had the high bar and grew even more. But some youngsters with like a Wyatt Langford is good to see for a big picture. You talked about Neto earlier, who's 10th on this list. But the ones that you kind of flagged carry some different names we haven't talked about yet. One, George Springer, that we've been hyping all offseason. But when you look at this overall name set, Steve, like who is grabbing your attention the most? And do you think that it's kind of changing how you view them going into next year?
I think I view them as legit. Like it backs up like any hype with Springer. I know we talked about it a bunch since we took him in the mock draft, like Michael Bush, PCA. I know that there was an extreme fall off in the second half, but I still think that, you know, there's now a 20 homer hitter in there that we did not think that was coming. Right. Or even like a 25 homer hitter. I know he's like, got there in what, like May or June, and like struggled to get close to 30 towards the end there. But yeah, basically this is a list of players that I'm buying. It's kind of like a combination of bat speed, Maxi V, and like the realization of it and like the actual performance. Like it's, you know, it's why we look at barrel rate to predict future performance. Right. So that's kind of what I would take from this. And like guys like Varsho, like, Varsho's really good when healthy. I know that's a big if, but he was healthy this year. You know, or when he came back from injury, he was healthy and looked really good doing so. And he's a player that I'm interested in that I think, you know, may be slept on a bit. He's at ADP 200. That's probably the highest he's been in a bit. I'm still interested. Yeah.
I got an interesting one here. How about Harrison Bader at age 31 declines his option with the Phillies? We see his bat speed skyrocket from 38th percentile in the league up to 71st, and his barrel rate went from like a very like paltry 6% up to over 10%, and we see him pop off 17 homers with a .277 batting average. We know he's got speed. Depending on the landing spot, I mean, you talk about ADP, like he's going in the 360s, but on some of those deeper leagues, I think, I mean, obviously age is not on his side, but like when you're looking at a guy who's a speedster like that, it's just, it's interesting when you put it all together, but I don't know that anything about his like underlying batted ball stuff looks like basically the .277. I don't think you can buy in there, but with how much he strikes out and everything. But he's just an interesting name to see on this. What is it? Top? Where's Bader? Okay, top 30. So it's not way up there, but I think going from 6% to 10th percentile is an interesting one.
I was just quickly looking to see like, hey, like, is that just a result of the Phillies basically only playing him versus lefties and like exploiting him and like and playing him in only like favorable matchups? But really wasn't the case. Like he had 11 homers and hit 300 versus righties this year and 307 plate appearances. And really wasn't that good versus lefties. And like Bader gets in like, cause he's a good fielder, right? Like that's where he comes in first. So Yeah, I was initially, I was like, oh, this must just be like they played him in, you know, like kind of how they do with like Brandon Marsh, right? Like Marsh, right, like only sees righties. We'll see like the easiest of lefties and like, you know, have his 17 homers and his, oh, you know, 17 homers and 450 plate appearances. But like, you know, it's cap because they just, he just can't hit lefties and the, sure, the Phillies sure do a good job making sure that's the case. That doesn't look like that was the case here with Bader. So, and even in 2024, he did better versus righties too. Hit 253 with seven homers versus them as well. So,
all depends, yeah, on
interesting,
where he lands,
interesting. All depends where he lands, but like definitely like someone that's probably should be on your radar for your fourth, fifth outfielders for sure.
Yeah,
he's and probably super. His ADP is probably super low right now because he doesn't have a team. Yeah, 363. Right around like Zach McKintry and Cedric Mullins. So give me Bader over both those guys for now.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's pivot to pitching, which is always an exciting one. The three that we're looking at here are fastball velo, stuff plus, and K minus BB. But to start with fastball velo, again, this was one that kind of Mike profiled, and it was the phenomenon that most of them hit, and it led to more strikeouts, which is kind of the no-duh. The ones that are adding velo always usually means that you're counting on better results, but the good ones hit, and then the ones that were down didn't exactly lead to like bust seasons across the board. But Steve, talk to me about some of these names. These are kind of the who's who of pitching breakouts in a way this season. So this will be fun talking about all these pitchers.
Yeah. I mean, the two Hunters, Hunter Green, Hunter Brown, those jump off the page, right? Hunter, like, it's amazing that Hunter Green started throwing harder, right? Like, went from 96.7 to 99.5 throughout the year. You would have thought like, okay, maybe he just needs to take a little bit off, and like that's how he could finally, you know, put everything together and turn that raw stuff into results. In fact, it was the opposite. It was just, hey, let everything go, and you know, you'll be an ace. I know that did come at the expense and only throwing 107 innings this year, so maybe that's the case. But I mean, he built on what was pretty much a breakout in 2024, where he had 150 innings of 27% strikeout rate, 9% walk rate, in 107 innings this year, 31.4% strikeout rate, 6.2 walk rate. Like that's Cy Young stuff if he pitches a full season. That's just still, yep, a big question mark. And that's sort of the flip side of this list, right? Like, is this list a breakout list, or is this list a list of guys that are going to get hurt next year?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and I
guess like you could always play that game where it's like, go to last year's velocity readers and see who's on the IL. Like, you know, this year it was, you know, Grayson Rodriguez, Sandy Alcantara, Garrett Cole, all that sort of good stuff, or not good stuff, but ominous stuff in a way, right? So,
yep.
You know,
yeah, and I think like Luzardo is one that, yeah, when you look at the strides he made, it was just a complete rebound to, I guess when you look at the sub four ERA, but 216 strikeouts, he threw 183 innings. The velocity was,
dude,
up.
He had those like two or three starts where he gave like 11 runs. Like, other than that, he was phenomenal,
right? Yeah.
Basically
lights
all
out
year, right? Where he was tipping, yeah, pitches for a little bit. It seemed like.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you look at, he's a guy who's had elbow tightness, forearm, yeah, strain, forearm strain. So,
and also a guy that's his performance is so greatly correlated with his velocity, right? Like if you pull up, for Lizard, I can try and do it while we ramble here, but like a graph with, you know, his velocity and ERA, it's probably extremely, extremely correlated. I'll try and pull it up as we talk here. But.
Well, yeah, I mean, in 2023, he was at 96.7 on the fastball, and this year he's at 96.5, and those were his good seasons. Last year he was 95.2, and that was the season he had a 5 ERA. Granted, it was a shorter sample before injury and everything, but yeah, I mean, he lives on that, and he doesn't get great extension, so it's like he needs every tick that he can get in the upper 90s. But yeah, when you look at this list, I guess the other two names, I looked at it as Matthew Boyd, who was kind of this found money in terms of production with the ratios. I know he wasn't a huge strikeout guy, but he was definitely like one of the value picks of the season, and his velocity climbed up from 92 to 93 and change. So he's high up on this list. But the two that kind of are the conundrums for all managers are Jack Leiter and Max Meyer. And those are ones that you just look at what they could be, and it gets you kind of like, how many times have we fallen into that trap, right? And if you look at ADP right now, you got Leiter at 255, you got Meyer. Oh, he's way down. So is Meyer out?
I guess I haven't seen any news there as far as what that is. Same with Hunter Green. That's something
hip
that we
surgery.
I don't so it's have early updates on either of them, but I'm sure you know, if they come into spring training and are healthy, like those prices will go up, especially if like a guy with Max Meyer that had all this hype in the offseason and performed well until he got hurt, if he does have a healthy spring. But yeah, here's Lizardo's fastball velocity and ERA plotted against each other. It's just you see it. ERA is down when fastball velocity is up. When fastball velocity is up, ERA or is down, fast ERA is up. It's crazy how closely correlated that is. Yeah.
Nice. That's a nice little chart there, Steve, on the fly. Well done. yeah, it's just zigzagging the entire way. Well, moving over to Stuff Plus, I think this was what was in my head when I was saying like the breakout who's who, because Christopher Sanchez, who I think went off as like SP6 in our mock draft, was phenomenal. And where does he land on this? Like, he's super high.
I think he was one. Or he was up there. K-BB, he was one. Spoiler alert. But yeah, okay. He's up there.
Yeah. So when you, when you look at the Stuff Plus guys, these are more of the same. Like you have both of your hunters. Like you said, we've got Christopher Sanchez as a total stud. Some other ones, Freddie Peralta, Tarek Skubal on the list. And then some kind of head scratchers there with like Kyle Freeland, Taijuan Walker. And then the ones that were the fallers didn't necessarily have a complete meltdown, like a Corbin Burns comes to mind. But then you have guys like Aaron Nola. So like, more than anything for these pitching ones, Steve, is to me, I'm thinking about like for Fab, and I know we always talk about like the value of those early season Fab moves can impact for the rest of the year, so it's worth more. But I also think it's just like a valid indicator that what you see early on is more often than not an indicator of what you're going to see the rest of the way when it comes to some of these like underlying metrics. So I think honestly, my takeaway on almost all this stuff is like doubling down. And I know we talk about like overreactions after like the first week, but once you get to like the first month, I think I'm going to be more aggressive next year on whatever those shooting stars are, because it could just
as far as what like stuff year. As far as like, okay, this guy's numbers by Stuff Plus sort of thing, or
Stuff Plus. Yeah. I think K minus BB, but I think on the hitting side, like Max EV, some of those guys, like even if it's like, I guess I'm saying, you remember where we were at with like Kyle Manzardo, and then he was up and down. I think that's the bet that's worth taking, because sometimes those turn into, I don't know, like Nick Kurtz and stuff that just can change.
And I mean, even Manzardo like ended up being, but he had 27 homers, right? You know, a 768
super OPI, platoon. Like, you know,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's right.
Manzardo, like if you I know the runs total is just laughably low. That had a hurt his 5x5 value. 47 runs, 27 homers, 47 runs. You know, that's as close as that's really like, it's one of those lines where it's kind of as close as you can get. His own teammates only drove him in 20 times. That's crazy. Yeah, and that also probably does have to do with him being a platoon, right? You know, get pinch run for, things like that. And also, you know, not really having a great defensive value, right? If you double in the eighth, like they're going to replace you. So that accounts for some of that. But still, to be driven in just 20 times in 142 games is crazy.
That's unbelievable.
So, yeah, long story short, hey, you know, that process ended up being fine. Like, you know, Manzardo was worth rostering all year long in your 15-teamers, things like that.
Yep. All right, do we want to hit on anything else here, or are we moving to K minus BB?
No, I think we can move on.
Okay, so K minus BB, looking at this year over year, you've got Hunter Green is 3, Christopher Sanchez is 4. Cole Reagans and Sean Manaea were 1 and 2 there. And then Logan Webb on this list.
What do you have as your minimum innings pitch for both seasons? That's a
I've got 150.
Yeah, I got 150 for both. What about your current season? Do you have 150 as well?
No? I've just got 150 in the one box. Maybe I'm missing the
yeah. Because Sanchez is my number one. Oh, I see. Yeah. Just to sort of look.
There we go.
Yep.
No. You got it. Sanchez number one. Logan Webb number two, Hunter Brown number 3. Okay, so this is just scanning this one. There's some interesting names here for sure. I think
I could pull some of the
ones you throw out are like, oh, Chris Bassett is on here. He got us so excited early on. But yeah, from your list, Steve, who do you want to kind of zoom in on that we haven't talked about yet?
I know you kind of hit on him, but Christopher Sanchez is just, his rise to acedom essentially is caught me by surprise. I don't know. I know we talked about him a bit on the draft show, right? Because of the fact that he went so high in the mock draft. But I know you've been a fan of him. I guess. I don't know why this is definitely a blind spot in my game, sort of these lefties with the change ups, but everything else about Sanchez too just sort of took off and enhanced, right? And he made himself better. Like, I don't know why I wasn't more in on it, right? I know the jump and swing strike rate was impressive. I was thrown off by the 20% strikeout rate, right? I didn't see where there could be that room for improvement, and the jump to 26% when you throw 200 innings, that's how you become an ace, right? I guess was there velocity? Was there a pitch change? Was there usage change? Like, what led to that? You know, he was a great pitcher, don't get me wrong. And
so the velocity,
even last year,
up.
Right? The 124 whip, I guess, is also kind of something that threw me off there a little bit.
The reason I was so pumped in spring, I almost can't take a full proper victory lap for it, but the reason I was targeting him so much is his velo was up from like 94.5 to like 97, and then he was also throwing the cutter more that he had like barely, it was like barely a show me pitch in 2024, and so it was kind of like, oh, he's completely redefined, and that's how I thought he was going to get to a 30% K K-rate or just be way up there. And then I remember rostering him. It started out as just like good and good results, but not how we wanted to see it. Like I was like religiously looking at Nick's like roundups to make, to see like, okay, did he do what we were hoping for? And honestly, he kind of did not.
He didn't throw the cutter much, right?
Yeah, he didn't. He moved away from it like altogether. But the 1 mile per hour jump was enough for
and that was across all of his pitches, basically. His slider, his changeup went from 85.1 to 86.3. His slider went from 84.4 to 85.7. His sinker went from 94.5 to 95.4. So basically gained a tick on all of his pitches.
He did. But I think if you just look at like what happened from a results standpoint, his changeup got a ton more whiffs. And I think it looks like it's more of just dialed in on location for the entire year. Like his changeup and his sinker were like sat right on top of each other, which probably just threw people off with like the off speed. But yeah, I'm for him being the number six pitcher off the board, I do think you kind of look at it and you're like, all right, well, he doesn't get above average whiffs with the slider. He's a great ground ball pitcher with elite extension. Like I'm not knocking a guy that, was my best pitcher the entire year, but it is just an interesting one for how much he rose, and he didn't like completely revolutionize how he pitches. It was just like he did everything a little bit better and threw a little bit faster. I don't know. It just doesn't like scream by to me the way that when Logan Gilbert, sprouted one of the best sliders to go with his great fastball, it's like, oh, well, that's a formula to be an ace. Sanchez is just like a slightly better version of who he's been for a long time and threw 200 innings.
If you look at the location plots on Pitcherless, Savant, wherever, like if you look at 2025 compared to 2024, in 2024, the change-up location plot, there was a really large red zone as far as where the pitches went most often. There was, probably 40%, 50% of it, like in the zone. And then in 2025, there was just a tight dot on the corner of the zone for the changeup as far as where he just was dialed in on that location. Same with the sinker, too. Like it catches the plate, but I mean, a sinker is a pitch to contact pitch, and it is right on top of where that changeup goes. So definitely a great call there to acknowledge that he was dialed in on his location. And honestly, for me, that's something that's, if that is the main cause, I mean, that's what I think. Like that's exactly where my mind goes, is like how often is that repeatable when you're just getting by on being dialed in on location? But hey, Framber Valdez kind of does it, right? In his own sense, like I don't think I've ever had a share of Framber Valdez. maybe Christopher Sanchez is that new one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the changeup is excellent. And, but like Valdez had like the curve coming in and out. So the pitcher, he's now going ninth in ADP. So a little bit later than six. So, the guys that kind of jumped him
as far as pitchers go, right? Okay.
Yes. So Hunter Brown is swap places with him. I think Hunter Brown is like ninth in R.
Yeah.
Yep. And then Logan Gilbert is seventh. Chris Sale is eighth. And then the first starting pitcher after Sanchez is Jacob DeGrom. And then it's a bit of a gap until Hunter Green.
Yeah.
And then Woo, which we got late. So that was a good pick for us. Yeah. There is kind of a little bit of a tier. DeGrom is interesting. I don't know. What do you think? DeGrom or Sanchez? Like, what would you do there?
I don't know. Like,
I think I lean Sanchez.
Like, and as I step back from like DeGrom's year, obviously,
Ross it paid off, too.
And he got 172 innings, and
he wasn't Superman, though.
Yeah, I'm almost like it. Like, if you would have told me in the beginning of the year that DeGrom was going to throw 172 innings, I would have been ecstatic. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I was ecstatic that DeGrom. I know, by the numbers, he was, you know, whatever, the third best starting pitcher, fourth best starting pitcher, a .92 whip. Like,
he only had one double-digit strikeout game.
Yeah. Like, he was great for me, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't, I almost would have rather take the 92 innings and 45% strikeout rate from 2020 on, right?
Yeah.
I almost would have rather taken the 64 innings from 2022 in a weird way.
Is there anything about, like, in a bizarre 38-year-old way for DeGrom that, like, he was, like, he just seemed focused human. On like health, he seemed and human, now right? He's going to turn on the burners and...
Maybe.
You know what I mean? He was just trying to, like, get through a health...
I was kind of waiting for it all year, right? Like,
me
you know?
Too. Me too.
I mean, there was an IL stint, right? He only threw 172 innings, right? There, or
yeah, I think yeah. I would have remembered panicking. Yeah, yeah, there was no IL stint.
No IL stint. It was just how they managed his innings, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one on Sanchez or DeGrom. I think even with everything we said, I think I'm leaning Sanchez just because it really feels like he's still on the ascent, even if he takes a step back.
And the innings are just more... Like, you kind of, like, a year ago, I would have said DeGrom just based on the upside. And, like, we kind of saw, like, this is the upside. And, like, it's not, like, Sanchez was Sanchez better than DeGrom this year?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder what the player rater says. But, like, you can't dream on that upside if it's just, you know, one 10 strikeout game, right? If it's a 27% strikeout rate from DeGrom, not a 35, right?
Right. Yeah. It is. It's kind of the Logan player rater.
Just pitchers. Yeah, Sanchez was sixth. DeGrom was 12th. Yep. So DeGrom was 23.60 Sanchez was $25.06, so $2 more, $2 more in your standard 12-team 5x5.
Yeah, I think the weird part about Sanchez, as good as everything was, is you almost have to, at least in my head, you have to account for him taking a step back. Like, I don't think you can predict he's going to be better than a 2.5 ERA, a 1.06 whip, and 212 strikeouts. Not unless he does something that gets us excited again, like the cutter or the slider's no longer just mediocre. It's actually a weapon. Like, if he changes his slider and it's all over the headlines in spring. But yeah, that's it's kind of a damning realization that's like SP9 and 10, and we're over here looking at Sanchez and DeGrom and we're like, I don't know if I feel amazing about it. Like, maybe, you know, like 10 picks sooner is Yamamoto, or you wait 20 picks and get Logan Webb. Yeah. Like, what's Logan Webb compared to Sanchez? I don't know. I think I'm just forming opinions on the fly, which is what we're doing this offseason. back to the rundown, though, Steve, on K-BB. Are there any other names here that really jump out that you want to hit on, either on the rundown or from the year-over-year?
Mackenzie Gore. I know the second half, and that's been a trend with him, and the overall numbers don't look good, but he did improve his strikeout rate. By, you know, 3%. The walk rate went up half a tick, but there's some interesting things there. And if he can keep the velocity and stay healthy, like, he's done it for half a season, maybe he can do it for a full season. And I know his name has been out there in trade talks, like, you know, who knows. Think about his draft price if Astros acquire Mackenzie Gore, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You'd forget that all about that second half and for very, very quickly.
First half at 302 ERA. The 120 whip was kind of a...
Yeah, an indicator. And the whip is always a bit high with Gore.
Post All-Star break at 675 ERA. Man,
he was not rosterable after being essentially an ace.
Yeah. That is wild, dude. He had, the walk rate ballooned for sure.
His 135 whip this year was the best of his career. Crazy.
Stat of the day. That is nuts. But yeah, 27% K rate, sub 10 walk rate.
Yeah.
Without looking, if you don't have it in front of you, Mackenzie Gore's age.
27.
26.
All right, nice. I still overshot it. Yeah. He'll be 27 in February. I get partial credit for that.
He's one of the ones, maybe it's just because we knew him so young. He was a
gigantic prospect, part of the Soto trade, right? Like, just been around forever.
And yet we've only seen four seasons of Mackenzie Gore. He's kind of a Giolito candidate, you know what I mean? Where it's like, it's never going to happen. And then if it happened, it'd just be like, Gore's turning a corner. So, yeah, I think it's...
How many 10 strikeout games did Mackenzie Gore have this year?
He had more 13 strikeout games than DeGrom had 10 strikeout games.
Three of them. A bunch of nines trickled in there, though, too.
Yeah, Gore is definitely he's a game logger when it's working, it gets you super pumped. Yeah, because last year he had a couple, I think like three double-digit strikeout games too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good looking at this. Again, we'll link everything out, but shout out to Mike and the awesome work he does over there. They're fun things to look at, and it's good formulating early opinions here with you, Steve. I think... Hitters, some good discussions there with Vinny P, with Josh Naylor, much higher up with Corbin Carroll. And then looking at the pitchers, I think there's interesting takeaways. But I've kind of changed my stance a little bit on Sanchez in real time. So, good discussion. I think the Hunters goes without saying that, like, if health is there, those are Cy Young candidates, but fun show, man. Any closing thoughts? Otherwise, I hope the holiday break is great for you guys.
Same here, man. Same here. Good getting back in the groove.
Yeah, man. All right. Well, thank you guys. We'll be every other week until we get closer sometime in February. We'll switch to weekly, but feel free to reach out if you guys have any thoughts, topics you guys want to hit on. We are happy to roll them in. Until then, episode 198. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.